Broadcast Studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome into ABQ Connect. Hope everybody has had a great week. And we're going to have Brian Cochran with John Moore Associates on the program for you here in a couple of minutes. But before we start visiting with Brian, we've got to have a nice send-off for our friend and producer, Tim Fuller. Tim, I appreciate you. You've done a great job of producing the show for us. We've done over 200 or 300 shows together in the past year, and we're going to send our Timothy off to another mission down in Roswell. So congratulations, thank you, and I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Jim. It's been an honor. The strides we've been able to make together and where you got this show now after, as I say, I calculated about 230 shows you and I did together. And so the bond we've created with each other over the last year or so, the bond we've created with the community, and the camaraderie and the steps that we've been able to take, I'm very proud, and I'm proud of you. I'm proud of the future and what the future holds. You know, you've got a great team here still around you, and so I'm excited to still be watching you and seeing this show really start to take off.
Well, tell us about your new endeavor. You're going to be down working in radio down in Roswell.
That's right. So previously I was employed by a company called Pecos Valley Broadcasting, and obviously I won't give them too much free advertising here, but they're a radio network there in the Roswell, Carlsbad, Pecos Valley area. And so it's a good endeavor, been very fortunate. And yeah, as I say, though, it's always difficult to make a big decision like that, to go back anywhere where you came from. But I felt confident as I just continued to reevaluate kind of where we were, and I just felt my, you know, the calling and asking God, and I just felt comfortable with the fact that you're in a great place. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things, you know, seasons of life. And so I think that the season of life here is completed, and I'm very grateful that God gave me this opportunity. And obviously the season was perfect, and the door that I walked into about 11 months ago was perfect, and the groundwork's been set. And, you know, a lot, you're to do with a lot of that, the vast majority of it. And so, the season of life, it seems like the door is closing, and I'm very grateful for that. But once again, one foot in front of the other. Gotta keep going.
Well, and for our listeners, they need to know that you're in my ear. I mean, you don't talk a lot, but you say, okay, Jim, go, and,
I just learned
we have to go to a break, and
the left ear. This is the first I'm hearing of this.
You didn't know that you were in my left ear.
I didn't know that. That's why you always have your headphone off of the left ear, so you don't have to hear me anymore, isn't that right?
No. You know what happens to me is I was brought up, I did a little radio early, but then I got to do television, and television is really totally different. And you taught me a lot about, you know, keep talking, you'll think of something to say, right? That's the radio guy's motto. And you're a great coach, Tim. You're 20 years old, had a birthday just here a couple days ago, and we had a chance to say happy birthday to you. You're going to have your family coming down this weekend and go for a little family vacation and then back to Roswell to start your new endeavor. So, my friend, we appreciate you. We ask God to bless you, and we'll be praying for you and hope that we cross paths with you again very soon.
Jim, it's been my high honor.
Hey,
Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you. Hey, we are now joined on the program by Brian Cochran, and Brian Cochran is with John Moore Associates. He's last visited with us last time on May 22nd. He has been very concise and very consistent in what he's told us about the financial markets in this country, and it has been a roller coaster ride for a lot of people. So we wanted an update from Brian. Brian, welcome to ABQ Connect.
Good afternoon, Jim, and I want to add my recognition for Tim there. He's really made it fun and easy for me to jump on as a guest. So thanks, Tim, for your service to the radio program, and good luck for the future.
Well, thank you, Brian. Those well wishes are very much appreciated. Tim's a young guy. He's got a lot of things that he wants to try, and he learned a lot here in Albuquerque with us. And I know that experience and his faith is going to carry him a long ways, and he's going to touch a lot of hearts. So I appreciate you saying that. Brian, you in preparation for the show, sent me something that I'm still shocked about, so I'm going to start the show with it. You said that, is it true, I'm going to ask you the question, is it true that as many as one-third, 30% of investors sold all of their stocks during the COVID-19 market crash?
Yeah, so what I referenced there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that specifically cited a Fidelity study that found just that. It was actually 31% of investors over the age of 65 sold all of their stock positions, and 18% of investors across the board sold all of their stock positions during that really volatile period, February and March.
Well, and of course, remind us of what your counsel was at that time. I mean, we had you on the show right when COVID was hitting, right when the market was starting to drop. Recall for us what you talked to us about.
Yeah, we really talked about the importance of trying to block out the short-term fear and panic and instead focusing on some principles, some that we've learned that are biblical principles, others that are just good things that we've learned as coaches of investors over a long period working with folks and studying market history. And one of those things we talked about was the importance of preparation. And as we started to come out, at least the stock market has come out of some of the COVID fear and started to rise back closer to new highs or closer to the long-term trends that we follow, what we see is those investors that were well prepared with having good cash they could live on during the downturn and not having too much debt or having some margin in their lifestyle and their expenses have actually fared pretty well. A lot of our clients that were well prepared seem to have survived this period, at least so far, really well.
Well, Brian, you also really caution people against knee-jerk reactions. And you tried to explain to us how pricing is done on Wall Street and how they look forward in the market. And if I remember correctly, we had about a three-week downturn, and then all of a sudden it started coming back up right about the time we had you on the show again. And then I mentioned here just in the open that the last time you visited with us was about May 22nd. And everything seemed to have gone through a timeline just like you told us it would. Can you review for us that timeline since about February 15th?
Yeah, and I think that February 15th was right about the top of the market. I had to look back for the exact date, and February 19th is when the S&P 500 hit its peak. At that point, it was up about 5% for the year, but it was actually at that point up about 44% from the previous low it hit during the bear market that happened in late 2018. So the market actually bottomed on Christmas Eve 2018, went up 44% to peak in February of this year, and then quickly dropped. So there was a quick 12% drop, and then we saw a little bounce back before dropping another 28%. During that 28% drop, the market actually hit the circuit breakers about four different times. And what that means is when the market will drop 7% in a given day, they will actually stop trading for 15 minutes just to try to give the market a chance to pause for a moment during a panic time. So on March 9th, March 12th, March 16th, and March 18th, the market hit circuit breakers and had to stop. So by the time the dust settled, we bottomed on March 23rd, and the market at that point was down 34% from its all-time highs in only about 6 weeks.
Wow. But it has kind of steadily climbed since then. Now, we've had three or four down days, and I want to ask you about that in a minute. But what has been the recovery, at least in the stock market?
Yeah, so we're about 33% off the lows at this point, depending on the day, which I'll be honest with you, we typically see some sort of a rapid rebound off bottoms, but this has surprised a lot of professionals and investors how quickly we've made this recovery in the stock market so far, and you can point to a few different reasons why that might be the case, but you mentioned it before. What investors seem to be doing is getting some confidence from the Federal Reserve, who's been very clear that they're going to keep markets liquid and support the markets in ways, new ways that they haven't done in the past. Also, some of the actions taken by Congress to provide loans to businesses and extra unemployment support to families. And then some of the economic data points that we see that come out weekly or monthly have come out and beaten expectations by a fair margin. So the combination of those factors seems to have given the stock market a lot of confidence that recovery could be on the horizon in the next year, and that maybe some of those worst-case scenarios that were thrown around two, 3 months ago may not come to fruition.
Yeah. Brian, I don't know if this is an appropriate analogy for Christian radio, but I think that it's true. A lot of times when I watch sporting events, and you're a sporting event guy, I'm always wondering, I wonder who's going to win this game. I wonder who's in the playoffs. And frankly, what I always refer to is what the odds makers in Las Vegas are saying. And they always come up with some pretty consistent predictions about who's going to win and who's not going to win and what the point spread's going to be. And I'm just doing it, you know, just to keep myself informed. But others do it because they want to bet. Well, I sometimes I think the stock market is similar, not that it's gambling, but that the market, the folks that price the market know so much and do so much research and are so concentrated on every detail. I think you've described that process for us where they're predicting what's going to be happening months down the road. I say this, I'd love for you to explain that a little bit to us, but also we've had about 3 or 4 days of down market. And is that having to do with the possible resurgence of COVID?
Yeah, last week the market went down about 4.5% on the S&P 500. And some people attributed that to concerns of a resurgence in COVID and possible additional shutdowns on the horizon. And that just speaks to the uncertainty. But you're exactly right when you talk about this idea of forecasting. So we don't call it predictions. We call it forecasts. And we don't want to be prophets as advisors because the biblical penalty for prophecy gone wrong is death by stoning. And that's not something I want to be exposed to. But when the market's pricing stocks, you're exactly right. They're looking to the future, and they're making some sort of assumption as to what's coming next. And economists and analysts make assumptions about what the next jobs report's going to tell us. They make assumptions about what the next quarterly earnings report will be for each company that they follow. So you get a lot of assumptions, and where the market tends to move rapidly higher or lower is when the real numbers that are issued turn out to be much higher or lower than those assumptions.
Well, and I think even though we have had some difficult situations, we've probably had more deaths in the United States than were originally predicted or projected, but we haven't had even half as many as they were predicting when the disease was running rampant in Wuhan and before it spread to the rest of the world. So we're kind of somewhere in the middle ground. What do you get any news about what the markets are saying about COVID, how they're interpreting the data? What do you hear?
You know, we hear a lot that people are looking at not just total cases, but mortality rates and how fast the virus is spreading. But I think what a lot of the market's following is the political response, because in the end, that's what will matter to economics. And people often feel the market can be a little bit insensitive, because in the end, what the market is pricing is how does this impact corporate earnings? Because in the end, stock prices are driven by their earnings, their profits. And so, for example, more cases is not a good thing by any means, but if those cases don't prove to overwhelm the healthcare system and therefore don't drive shutdowns, then it's unlikely that the increase in cases will hurt corporate earnings. So that's the formula that the investors are looking at. And again, that can sound insensitive, but in the end, you know, corporations are priced based on their profits.
Absolutely. Brian Cochran with John Moore Associates on the phone with us this afternoon. And by the way, Brian, in our future meetings, if you like, you're allowed to come now into the studio. And we've got the little social distancing set up in here, so you're about 6 feet away. You're always welcome to do that. But let me ask before we take a break, how are all the Cochrans doing? You got your boys? You guys thinking about getting them back into school? How's everything going with the stay-at-home order?
It's good. I think the biggest thing we've seen change in our family is that other kids are out to play again. So our kids aren't just stuck trying to play with their lame mom and dad. They can actually get out and play with some peers. So that's been a big change for us because our kids are used to being in sports and other activities with children all the time. So that's a blessing.
Yeah. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk to Brian about, he's already mentioned that if you were well prepared, you're probably in pretty good standing. But we're also going to find out what investors he might recommend, what they do moving forward, if maybe they're one of the folks that sold all their stock. So when we come back, Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, we'll be right back.
Do you have an old clunker or a good running vehicle? Donate to Joy Junction. It can help bring hope to the homeless. If it's in good condition, great. If not, no problem. Running not required. We'll take it. Just contact us and we'll take care of the rest, even towing. Just call 505-217-9586. Your vehicle donation will help us provide housing for Albuquerque's homeless families. Joy Junction, bringing hope to the homeless. Won't you help? Here's Joy Junction CEO, Elma Reynolds.
Joy Junction has been serving homeless families, men and women, for more than 33 years now. And it's a dream come true for our late founder, Jeremy Reynolds, to have a new additional space to give more dignity and privacy to those who come to our doors. But we need your help. Your generous donation means hope to somebody, and we are here to be that hope.
For more information, go to joyjunction.org. Be that hope. Go to joyjunction.org.
Hi, this is John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive. You have heard a word a lot here of late, and that word is essential. Here at Southern Boulevard Automotive, our master certified technicians understand that your car, truck, or SUV is essential to getting you from point A to point B. We are open for business. Our hours are 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. And don't forget that we have free towing with repairs. Just call for details. Our phone number is 892-2300. That's 892-2300. We are located on the corner of Southern and Western Hills across from McDonald's in Rio Rancho. And I'm here to tell you that the most essential thing in this life is the cross of Jesus. There is absolutely nothing more important to you and I. God saw you as essential and gave his only begotten Son that you would believe in him and have eternal life. Never minimize the cross. It's the centerpiece of the gospel. And never forget the hope you and I have in the empty tomb. I'm John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates on the phone with us this afternoon, kind of reviewing what's been happening in the financial markets. Brian has actually received several awards as a certified financial planner. He's done a great job in our community, continues to give a lot to our community. As we mentioned earlier, he's raising his family here. And Brian, tell our listeners how they can get in touch with John Moore Associates and take advantage of some of the resources that you have and contact you.
Sure. So our website, johnmoore.com, has a lot of resources, including our contact information, has all the bios for our different team members, as well as our insights page where we post regular content with a lot of the same principles we discuss here on air. So I encourage people to look to that. It also has a few recordings from sessions we've had with guest economists and other speakers that have contributed to our clients through different webinars we've hosted during COVID. So we try to put a lot of resources out there to help people just make wise decisions with their resources.
Mm. So, Brian, let's talk now about those investors that we opened the show with. 30% of elderly folks that sold all their stock, and then about 18%, I think, was the number you used, of all investors sold out of their stocks. Tell me what those people do now since they made that decision early in the pandemic.
It's tough. It's really tough if you sold out, partly because this stock market's risen so quickly. You know, we know long term the S&P 500 has averaged approximately 9.5% return if you include the dividends paid by those companies. So if you think about it, the market's bounced back 33% from the lows. So if you sold at the bottom, you've missed 3 years worth of returns already. There's nothing that says we can't go back down again. But in the short term, it seems like it's a big missed opportunity to catch the rebound. And this goes back to what we talked about early on, where if you sell your stocks, you're really making two decisions. Mm. The first is that you want to get out, which is actually the easier decision because when you're at a time of fear and panic, selling your stocks might make you feel a little bit better in the short term. But the second decision is the hard one, and that's when do I get back in? And most people, from my experience, do not get back in lower. They only end up buying back the same stocks they owned before at a higher price. So the first thing you have to do is just come to terms with the fact that you're probably not going to get those same prices you had before. It's possible. At this point, it doesn't look probable that you'll see markets return to those lows. So you have to come to terms with that. The second thing is you have to decide some sort of strategy for reentering the market that is not dependent on your emotions. And what I mean by that is a lot of our investors, if they're reentering the market, we will set out a time strategy where maybe we reenter one-third of their investment immediately and then do a second third in 30 days, and then the last third, 30 days after that. And that way they're reinvested, and we're not looking at the markets. We're not letting our emotion drive the decision, but we're simply staging back into the market steadily, so that within a short period we're fully reinvested and back to participating in the markets.
Brian, give us some of the data that you've given us in previous shows. I mean, the quote that I'm always impressed with, and I'm going to paraphrase, obviously, is that you said, look, if you take a block of 20 years, and you could take that block of 20 years any time out of, say, the last 60, the stock market has always been positive. And I think that's a pretty interesting thing for people to think about, especially in these volatile times.
Yep. And the key lesson there is the longer your horizon, the more likely you're going to be positive. And we've talked about that principle of time in the market, how long you're in the market, is much more important than timing the market and investing at the perfect day. And that's one of the ways that investing is so different. You mentioned before that, you know, the comparing investing to gambling, and they're certainly not the same thing. If you sit down at a craps table or a blackjack table, you might get hot early, but the longer you play, the more likely your money is going to be left at the casino. And stock markets are the opposite. As long as you use steady investment principles and simply consistently participate in the market. Certainly, if you sell every time the market goes down and then don't buy back until it gets higher, you're not going to have that positive experience.
Well, Brian, I do want to make a comment. I know people, I'm not going to bring up anybody's names, but my friends are probably going to know who I'm talking about. I've got two or three friends that have gone away from advisors like yourself. And they've gotten these online programs on their computer, and they've tried to do day trading. Mm-hmm. They're never in a position very long, and every one of them, without exception, has lost a lot of money. And in my opinion, that type of trading is gambling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where we try to draw the line between, you know, investing based on principles and process, having a predetermined decision-making process, versus simply speculating. And I'll be honest with you, we have a lot of clients where the majority of their assets might be under our management, but we frequently will set up a what we call a playpen account, you know, a small portfolio on the side that they play with. And I don't mind that because it keeps them engaged and interested in the markets. They can learn some of the hard lessons of investing with a small pool of resources. I do get worried though when people take all of their assets and they start to just speculate without process. And a lot of their decisions become based on fear and greed, or on hot tips that they get from friends or on a website. And what we're seeing right now is a lot of young people have started doing that using some of the trading apps where it's free to trade. Mm-hmm. But the lessons they're going to learn eventually, you know, based on history, we know that most of the time that type of speculation does not end well.
Brian, you mentioned your team at John Moore Associates. Give us an idea about the team and the different expertise that go into creating a wonderful service for your investors.
Yeah, so I mentioned the importance of process, and we use that word a lot around John Moore Associates. We think process is really important because it does remove some of the emotion that can happen with investing, which is such an important component. So we have 10 team members at this point. We have 6 here in Albuquerque. We have 4 in our Arizona office. And 6 of us between the two offices get together every Monday, and we spend hours looking over data points. We have a proprietary process for analyzing markets. And so every week we're looking at the latest update of the same data points, and it helps us identify trends in the market. Again, we're not prophets. We're not trying to figure out with some sort of guarantee what's going to happen next. We don't think that's possible, and that's not a good goal to have. But it helps us make wise and consistent decisions on behalf of our clients. And our job is not always to, you know, beat the market by a certain level or to always know what's happened next. Our job is to do better than our clients could do for themselves by applying process and being an objective third party making those decisions on their behalf.
Brian, I know on your website, John Moore Associates, it's johnmoore, M-O-O-R-E.com. You don't hesitate at all to share the biblical principles that the company is run by, do you?
That's right. And what we tell people, not all of our clients are believers or share our faith, or they might be at different points along their walk. And what we tell people is these are principles, these biblical principles, we know they work. They've been proven over thousands of years now. They speak to our natural human condition really well. And so we're going to apply these biblical principles. And what we often tell people is any great advisor should be using these principles, and we often see that they do, whether they're Christian or not. They just may not know their biblical principles. Things like being wise with debt, keeping liquidity, having a long-term horizon, living within your means. These are all actually biblical principles that help people make successful and wise decisions with their money.
Brian, when we come back, I'm going to ask you about a friend of mine. He had about $180,000 in savings and investments. He liquidated that at the beginning of COVID, ended up with about $110,000 of cash, and is worried now about reinvesting that because of the possible resurgence of COVID. I'm going to throw that scenario to you when we come back and ask you what your advice to him would be. We'll be right back with Brian Cochran. Stay with us.
Hey, Boudicke, Car Spa here. Did you know that Car Spa has 4 locations, or that Car Spa is locally owned for 47 years? Did you know that Car Spa employs more than 100 people in Albuquerque, or that 2 Car Spa locations remain traditional full and exterior wash services, and 2 new stores are called Car Spa Flex? That means everything or all services at one location. No wash across the street from our wash across the street from our wash across the street. That can get expensive, right? Flex has fast lanes, landing areas for both express and full service finish, express and complete detail landing areas, optional courtesy vacuum, and relaxing waiting area. Some washes offer expensive convenience offset by free popcorn. Car Spa, value and experience exceed all expectations. Now, stay tuned for the pop quiz called Show Me. Experience the new Flex, East Central or Sevilla at Core. Google Raintunnel Car Spa for exact location.
Here's Ava, the owner of Monroe's.
Dad, I think we're in deep doo-doo.
Is that why everyone keeps buying all the toilet paper?
Actually, New Mexico culture is rich. Plus, Monroe's has red chili, green chili, and the best customers in the world to go with it.
Boy, Dad, you must really love our customers.
I sure do, just like I love you, Stella.
Hey, what about me?
Of course you too, Ava.
Treat yourself to a delicious Monroe's meal. See Monroe's menu at monroeschili.com. Then call in your order to Monroe's on Osuna at 881-4224 or Monroe's downtown at 242-1111 for carryout or free delivery.
Life can take an unexpected turn in your home or business by fire or flood. As a result, you may have mold problems. Let the experts put your mind at ease with a quick response from locally owned water extraction experts. They'll provide service within the hour, are available 24/7 for emergencies, and work with all insurance companies. Professional, certified, and friendly technicians are here to do the job right the first time. Call the experts now at 505-250-6500 or visit them online at waterextractionexperts.com.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Cochran, the voice of calm for us in these volatile financial markets. Brian is with John Moore Associates. He's got a couple of fancy initials behind his name. CFP for Certified Financial Planner and CKA. Tell us about that one. Is that Certified Kingdom Advisor?
That's right, Certified Kingdom Advisor, and that's a designation that I've earned along with some of our other team members as a result of training we have from the Kingdom Advisors organization, and that's the application of biblical principles in financial advice. So some CKAs might be CPAs or attorneys, but also many of them are financial advisors with a similar role for their clients as I have.
Right. Brian, all so far on the show today and in previous shows, you've basically told us, look, you stay in the markets. The markets have, you know, time in the market's more important than timing the market. Stay with it. That was the advice you gave us from day one. But I just gave you a scenario. A person that I know, not a close friend, but they shared with me that they'd lost, I want to say, 70 grand, somewhere between 180 and 110 is what they had left after they sold. But now they're worried about reinvesting that in the stock market because it looks like the market now is expecting COVID to run rampant again. What kind of advice do you have for somebody like that just in general? I know you have to know them and you have a process. Kind of enlighten us as to how that works.
Sure. So I don't want to speak to, like you said, I don't know that person's scenario, so I don't want to speak to exactly how much risk they should take or, you know, exactly what stocks they might own. But there's a few principles to learn here. And what John Moore likes to say, he's been such a good mentor to me, and I've picked up lots of, great little quotes from John. And one of his favorites is, you've already paid the tuition, now let's learn the lesson. Mm. And I'd say in a case for someone who sold out during the lows, you've certainly paid some tuition. And it might be, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. It might be just a couple thousand dollars. It could be hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars of losses that you incurred because you sold low. So what's the lesson? The first thing I would say is, look for a way to remove your emotion and your short-term feelings from your decision-making process, because that's probably what happened to this investor. You know, there may have been some technical process that he or she was following that caused the sale of stocks during a downturn, but most likely it was pure emotion. So that's the first lesson to learn there, is let's move forward without emotion. And as I've mentioned a few times already, that means we need to lean on process. And if that person's not confident enough to develop their own process with their knowledge of markets and market history and the data points that might be needed, then it might be time to look at some sort of a professional service to help guide the reinvestment so that those mistakes aren't made again. And it doesn't have to be with in-person financial planner as we serve our clients. There's online resources. But in the end, it sounds like it's someone who let emotion kind of take control, mm-hmm. and that rarely ends well.
You bet. So let me ask you this question as a continuation of that one. Is it actually possible for you to help protect a person from themselves?
It is possible, and it's actually a big part of our training, and I've been a big fan of the topic of behavioral finance, which is a growing area of study for a lot of advisors, and it really speaks to how our emotions and how our human behaviors can impact our financial decision-making, whether it's our spending, our investing, how we view debt, how we interact with our finances with our spouse, a lot of different aspects that end up driving whether we're successful or not managing our money. And so we train our advisors in our firm, and a lot of other advisors take on this kind of training, so that when we sit down with a client, we can clearly identify what behavioral biases they might be exhibiting, and then display empathy and hopefully share some wisdom about how to move forward. You cannot stop the emotions from happening. That's really important to understand. So you investors that might be listening that feel fearful or uncertain, we can't stop that. Those feelings are going to come. What we have to do is find a way to manage your portfolio, make your financial decisions where you're not relying on those emotions to drive that decision. And sometimes that's the role of an advisor, or you simply set up a system for yourself where you have other ways to make decisions.
Brian, can you share a story just in general about somebody that maybe was very, very emotional, but they heeded your advice and they did what you said? What's the meeting like 6-8 weeks down the road when they trusted your advice and what your team is advising them and it came out positive?
Yeah, and it doesn't always turn out positive, I'll tell you that first off. So we talked about before that Fidelity study where 31% of investors over age 65 sold out of the market. I would say probably 30% of our clients over 65 called us in fear and of concern. And anybody who didn't call us, we reached out and called them to make sure that we were having good conversation about what was happening in the markets. So I first want to acknowledge that our clients aren't, they don't lack emotion just because they have an advisor. But when we sit down and have those conversations, we try to calm them down. And usually 6 to 8 weeks later, what we're hearing is them express gratitude and appreciation because they've come out of that emotional state and they can look back and say, wow, you really helped me from making a big mistake. And during the periods when they're emotional, usually we're pointing to those principles that we've been discussing, but also pointing to the cash reserves we set aside for their short-term needs. We're helping them understand that we've planned for volatility and help them understand that they don't need to be reacting emotionally because we've already equipped them to survive a period of uncertainty.
Hmm. Brian, I want to play off what you just said a little bit, just to, again, have you direct us from some basics. So we're talking about people that maybe they have $100,000 to invest or more, but there are people that are just starting out. And you do a lot more than your company talks about budgeting. Of course, we have Rob West and MoneyWise as a program that your company helps underwrite that's broadcast every day here on KNKT. It's on about an hour before this program, and it's, you know, Rob is really a wise man, another one of those kingdom advisors, and I think that's one of the reasons your company underwrites that program is because you want people to start thinking about budgeting and all of these different things. And the long way around the block for me to get to this question, is it unusual in this market that we've had such low mortgage interest rates and low rates on car loans and those kind of things, and the market has been positive for most of this year?
Is it unusual for that to be the case?
Yes. I mean, normally I've seen, in my experience, I mean, I retired from banking and used to do real estate lending. Anytime the market was going positive, the bond market would always crater, and that made mortgage rates go up. But it seems like this has been kind of an unusual time in that when the market is positive, rates have remained really low. And is that an unusual thing that you've seen in this market?
Well, part of what the market's pricing in right now on the bond side is a very low inflation expectation. So one thing that drives bond interest rates, as you well know, is expectations for how much cost of living might increase in the near future and in the long term as well. And when inflation expectations are low, it allows bond interest rates to remain low as well. And right now, there's actually, many professionals would say there's a fairly significant concern of deflation right now rather than inflation. So that keeps rates low. Also, the Federal Reserve, to keep the markets healthy and liquid and to stimulate activity, have dropped interest rates. So the short-term interest rate that the Federal Reserve controls has been moved back down to near zero. So everything right now is pushing rates lower rather than higher. It's a lack of inflation, the Fed moving interest rates down, the Fed buying corporate bonds, which is a new action on their part. All of these things are designed to keep interest rates low and allow anyone who needs debt right now, individuals or corporations, to have low interest on that debt.
Mm. Brian, talk to us a little bit about, this is a little bit off script too, but talk to us a little bit about the disaster relief loans offered to businesses and the PPP loans. Those seem to have had a pretty positive effect on the economy.
They have, and I think that's one of the uncertainties that we're facing now, though, is a lot of that PPP loan money has probably already been spent by small businesses. So we're starting to get to a point here in the next couple months where the economy needs to start running on its own momentum and its own legs rather than get supported. There has been talk of Congress providing additional stimulus, but for now, that's one of those areas that causes at least some level of confidence for the stock market, is that some businesses that maybe otherwise would have gone out of business are still running because of that government support. And then on the unemployment benefit side, many people are familiar that $600 a week of extra unemployment was issued, and that's going to end, I believe it's at the end of July. So that's another key benchmark to see, can we get the unemployment rate down? Can we get people back to work in time so that there's a smooth transition as people step away from that? And that $600 a week, in addition to other unemployment benefits, actually, the average benefit people were receiving in unemployment was about 120 or 130% above their previous earnings. So it's actually created a lot of spending capacity in the short term, but again, that's going to stop at some point.
And again, you're going to encourage everybody, if you haven't already done this, you need to save how much money as a reserve fund?
3 to 6 months is the traditional rule of thumb. But what we tell our investors as well is not only should you have an emergency fund, but any money you intend to spend on a large purchase, like maybe a new car or a trip or a home improvement, anything that's really required in the next 18 to 24 months should also be outside of the market and in cash available so you're not subject to the short-term volatility and uncertainty of markets.
Mm, wow. Well, I know none of this is easy. Discipline is never pleasant. That's what Hebrews says. And so it takes a lot of discipline. We appreciate your encouragement very much, Brian. We have a last segment with you here in just a couple minutes after we say thank you to some of our investors in KNKT, our sponsors, and we really do appreciate them very much. Really appreciate John Moore Associates and all they do to help our station. We'll be right back with Brian Cochran. Stay with us.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms, and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
This is John MacArthur. Join me for today's Portraits of Grace. Did you realize that the history of redemption centers on the cross of Jesus Christ? That's what hymn writer John Bowring expressed when he wrote, "In the cross of Christ I glory, towering o'er the wrecks of time, all the light of sacred story gathers round its head sublime." And the Apostle Paul told the Corinthians, "I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." You see, Paul knew what the hymn writer knew, that without the cross of Christ there is no salvation and no Christianity. Since the cross was the focus of Paul's preaching, it must be the center of our proclamation as well. No one can ever come to God unless he understands the full significance of Jesus' sacrifice on the cross. Since you're a portrait of God's grace, make sure you carefully explain the gospel.
Listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Cochran is a certified financial planner with John Moore Associates, a frequent contributor to the program. We try to grab Brian at least every month if we can. He was last on about May 22nd. That's only significant because everything that Brian tells us, you know, to stay in the market and time in the market is more important than timing the market. All of the things that he's asked for in terms of calm have been absolutely right, and the market has recovered pretty substantially. Of course, we still have a few down days here and there, and again, he's again appealing to us to, you know, stay the course. And Brian, talk to us a little bit about how your process in general might be different than other investment companies.
Sure. So, most professionals have some sort of a process, and I say most because I frequently see statements from new clients that come in from investors, professional investors that clearly do not have a process, but the vast majority are doing things wisely and taking good care of their clients' resources. What makes our process different in a couple ways is, for one thing, when we buy individual stocks, we avoid companies that we think breach biblical principles, so we will not invest directly in individual stocks of companies that profit from alcohol, tobacco, abortion, gambling, or pornography. So that helps, I think, reflect our values when we're investing in companies, and that helps, I think, align us with the values of many of our clients.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian, I know that I visit frequently on ABQ Connect with churches all over the city. You know, big churches, small churches, et cetera. Almost every one of them has told me that their giving has actually stayed very consistent, even though they haven't, up until very recently, had live services. Everything's been online. A lot of our charitable organizations have told us the same thing. Are you looking at data at all about charitable giving and how that's been affected during the crisis?
You know, I haven't seen very much nationwide data on that. I did some research on that before today's call. I have heard some things from our local affiliate of National Christian Foundation, which is an organization that tries to encourage generosity and provide some wonderful tools to do that. And they mentioned that specifically in the donor-advised funds that they manage, and think of a donor-advised fund a bit like a charitable checking account. It's a place where you store resources to give to charity. They've seen a large amount of distributions, an increase of over 50% year over year in the distributions out of those donor advised funds. So people who had money set aside to charity are pushing it out to local organizations. And especially now that the stock market's recovered a bit, they are seeing more donations going, specifically stock donations, going into those donor advised funds to equip future gifts. And I can tell you just from our experience working with the families we serve, many of them have been more generous than usual, and we have a very generous client base anyway. But we've seen a lot of people stepping up and making larger than usual gifts or accelerating gifts they may have planned for the future. So I'm not surprised when I hear that many organizations are feeling that support. What I'm curious to see is how that's sustained over the long term if the economy continues to slowly come back.
Well, one of the areas that I think I'm personally concerned about is I'm really concerned about our Native American communities. They've been especially hard hit. Of course, nationally, they talk about the Navajo Nation, which is primarily in Arizona, but up near Gallup and kind of that northwestern part of New Mexico. And, you know, the folks there have just been decimated by this. I mean, the numbers continue to rise. There's all kinds of reasoning. In fact, we had Landall Benali. He is a pastor of Tolokai Calvary in Gallup. He's at the epicenter of this. He and his wife are distributing food almost every day. Samaritan's Purse, which is a nationally known disaster relief organization, Christian Base, they made a name for themselves during COVID in New York City in Central Park, setting up a tent hospital. And they've not set up a hospital, but they've set up a warehouse for food distribution at the Rehoboth Mission School up near Gallup. And they are distributing food every day. Yesterday, I had Chris Franklin and Matt Moffitt. Of course, we also want to mention Citizen Church. Nick Camacho has been really involved with that effort. But those three big churches have come up with a lot of money trying to continue the food delivery to the Navajo Nation. I want to encourage our listeners. I want to encourage people that are generous. Not just to say, okay, we're going to feed people in Navajo Nation, or we're going to provide food, say, for New Mexico kids, feed New Mexico kids for kids on the weekend, or we're going to help Joy Junction, or we're going to help Steelbridge. Please think about and pray about all of the charitable organizations you hear about here. Brian's organization frequently works with charitable organizations. I know you recently did some things with Feed New Mexico Kids, Brian. So how do you guys decide who you want to help and when you want to help them?
Yeah, as a company, that's a tough decision because we have so many generous clients that don't only give to charities, but they also serve with those charities on boards of directors or maybe they're just a major donor, so they're very in tune with the organization's needs. And so it's hard because a lot of these organizations are brought to our attention, and obviously, just like individuals, our company can't give to everybody all the time. So one of the things we do is we try to build awareness of those organizations. We do an annual education event with our clients. Typically 100 to 130 clients are attending that every year. And we actually invite a charity. This year it was Feed New Mexico Kids, to come and talk about what they're doing in the community, talk about their specific needs, and then we provide an opportunity for a matching gift to that charity so that the clients not only get exposed and understand the needs of that organization, but we're trying to incentivize them to give by matching those gifts. And we've had actual clients jump on the boards of those organizations as a result of what they see in our meetings. We've had people volunteer with organizations that they previously weren't aware of. So that's been a lot of fun. And when we choose organizations, what we specifically look for, and this shouldn't be everyone's criteria, as we look for organizations with a local impact in the communities that we serve, we look for organizations that reflect our Christian values, and we look for organizations that maybe don't receive a lot of state or federal grant support, so they're really dependent on the local community because, again, we're trying to expose our clients to that specific entity. And if they're already getting a lot of national recognition or national support, then we tend to stay away from those organizations. And that doesn't mean that they don't merit gifts, and you should still give to those national ones, but we feel like we have a unique opportunity to lift up and highlight the local organizations.
I want to draw your attention to one of our sponsors on KNKT, and he's a local businessman. His name is Buck Buckner. He owns the Rain Tunnel Car Spas here in Albuquerque, and his entire advertising campaign, even before COVID hit, was about buying local, emphasizing how we needed to keep money in the local economy, and he just does a brilliant job of it, and he's always pitching Buy New Mexico. How important is that for us, Brian?
It is important. I mean, it's clear, and I know he talks about on his spots on KNKT how more of the money stays in the community when you buy local. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't want to exclude any national organizations. For example, there's a Starbucks around the corner from my office, mm-hmm. and Starbucks is a national chain and a big organization. So you might say, well, I'm going to keep it local, but keep in mind that Starbucks employs local people, you know, so there's still a benefit to the local community from national organizations. However, it is very clear that when you support a local company, more of the money stays in, you know, more of the taxes are paid locally, more of the wages, more of the profits stay locally. All of that helps impact the local community, and I think that's a powerful thing.
Brian, how is the available data now that you're looking at? And I'm sure you're going to tell us the same thing you've told us at the end of every spot or every segment that you've done with us. What's the available data? How is that directing investors forward from today?
I think right now what people are starting to see is just some little signs of positive. I'll use an example. Last month's retail spending report was forecast that May spending would have gone up by about 8%. That was the expectation. And then it turned out it went up by, I think, about 17.5%. So we're starting to see some of these numbers come through that not only exceeded expectations, they might have exceeded expectations by quite a bit. And I think what we're going to see, July is going to be a big month. In July, we will see the jobs numbers from June. So we'll see if we're starting to see a jobs recovery that's significant. We're going to see corporate earnings begin to release from the second quarter. So, of course, most of the COVID shutdown happened in the second quarter. So when we start to see corporate earnings, not only what happened in the last 3 months, but start to get a sense of what they're forecasting going forward, that's going to be significant. So we're getting some data points right now, but that's going to ramp up significantly in July. And I think that's a potential for volatility, high or low. Up or down as those data points come in. We'll see if they exceed expectations or if they fall short.
One of the big criticisms that was coming out of some of the politicians around New Mexico in relation to how Michelle Lujan Grisham has managed this whole thing is criticism that the big box stores, Target, Walmart, et cetera, were allowed to stay open. You know, they were allowed to sell groceries and sell clothes and sell liquor and sell appliances and all the different things that they do, but the small mom and pop shops were kind of shut down. Do you expect to see earnings with the big companies like Target and Walmart and them go up because of the coronavirus?
They already have, you know, reported some sales numbers along the way, even before their quarterly earnings, that show that indeed they did have sales jump. Mm-hmm. A lot of that has started to plateau. So a lot of those big sales happened in February, March, April during the shutdown. Part of that was people buying more than usual because they were hoarding things. You know, people were buying, you know, toilet paper is always the one people point out, but is also various food products, things like that. So that may be in the past a little bit more than it is in the future. I think small businesses are starting to come back, and we're starting to see people realize that the small businesses really need their support. And some of those small businesses people like to go to, they just couldn't. So maybe they're anxious and they can't wait to get back in and buy from that local restaurant or shop at their favorite local store. So I think in the past we certainly did see the bigger businesses getting all the benefit of all the spending for the last several months. But my hope is that that's going to plateau and that some of that capital will go back to the smaller.
You know, I don't think this question is going to have a whole lot to do with our economy, but it's going to have a whole lot to do with, I want to say, some recreation that we're all kind of craving by having sports back available. Brian, how are you looking at some of these sports leagues? Looks like Major League Baseball is still at an impasse, but the NBA's pretty close to being able to start, going to kind of put all the players in a bubble out at Disney World and play a season. I understand that we've got soccer going and we've got all kinds of other types of, well, I know we've had NASCAR going now for about a month without fans in the stands. How do you look at all this sports stuff going on?
Well, I think there is an economic factor there. You know, you look at the economic impact of having professional sports and what it drives for spending and tax revenues and travel. My family, we've been to a few Arizona Cardinal games over the years. It's one of the great treats we get to do together. And that's a very visitor-friendly stadium because people, you know, you get the Green Bay Packers in town, and it's not too hard to convince a Green Bay Packer fan to come out of Wisconsin and come down to Arizona in the late fall or in the winter to watch a football game. So you look at communities like Arizona and places in Florida and some of these destination sports venues, and it's a big deal if they can't operate. So it's one of those many points that people are following. And we're starting to see people more willing to travel. Certainly the hotel bookings are going up. They're not anywhere close to where they were pre-COVID, but they're on the rise. People are flying more. So if they will start to allow crowds to gather, statistics show that there's a fairly sizable percentage of the population that's willing to go attend, and that will drive a lot more economic activity.
And I guess, how are you feeling about schools opening and some of the procedures and things that are going to be required? Are you happy or are you still concerned?
Yeah, after having my kids home 24/7 for a few months, I can't wait. And it brings some sense of normalcy and balance to our lives. But also, as I mentioned before, our kids are used to being social. So hopefully they can keep that. We know, based on the stats, that COVID is a very, very low risk for children as far as becoming infected to the point where they need to be hospitalized or there's a risk of death. It's really the risk of possibly bringing a virus home to an ill parent. What will be interesting to see is if we do have flare-ups in certain cities or in certain regions of a town or a county or in a certain school, whether or not they decide to shut those schools down, you know, midstream and go back to remote learning. That's going to be a big challenge. And also, if any kids have any sort of symptoms, they're not going to be able to go to school likely. So there's going to be a need for some sort of ongoing remote education. Part of me is happy for that because, you know, in our schools, our children have always been in class with kids that are clearly sick but still come. So it should do well to even slow down the spread of flu and other viruses along the way.
Well, I know a lot of parents like you, and just to tell you, I mean, I had 5 kids. I went through all of that. Love every one of them. Wouldn't give any of them back. But I got to tell you, I'm glad that I didn't have 5 small children going through the COVID-19 virus. That would have been tough. So I admire and respect, and I will be praying for you and your wife and all the other parents out there, Brian, that have gone through this, and you've been a great blessing to your kids. I hope it's been a special time to bond with them, and it'll obviously be something. 2020 will always be a year that we remember. I'm not sure we'll remember it positively, but there has been a silver lining to a number of things, hasn't there?
I think so. The people I really feel sorry for, I was talking to a client the other day that, you know, her son's wrapping up his senior year, and a lot of missed events for that group. So those who are going through graduations, you know, my heart really goes out to them. That's a special time for a lot of young people, time of celebration and transition. And she mentioned that he just can't wait to get to college now. He's kind of over it, and he wants to get on to the next phase, which is too bad because it should be a time of joy for that family. So, yeah, as much as I can complain about our situation, my whole family, extended family, has been healthy. Most of us have maintained our employment. There's been some ups and downs with some people in my family, but overall we're doing well, and we enjoy being with our kids. We've enjoyed that time. There's a lot of families that have suffered a lot more than us.
Brian, thank you so much for joining us today on ABQ Connect. Want to remind our listeners that johnmoore.com is a great website. You can get all kinds of information and insights from that website. Brian, you're gracious to join with us, and I hope we get to see you here in another 3 or 4 weeks.
Thanks, Jim. Always a pleasure, sir.
Want to remind everybody that we just launched our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/ABQ Connect to stay up to date with our guest topics and feedback. We'll also be posting this interview on abqconnect.online so you can listen again if you missed it today. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.